Hello and welcome to Our Food with me, Mary Brophy. On today's programme, in Letterkenny, I'll be talking about a growing trend among Donegal restaurants where, in an effort to guarantee freshness and variety, they're growing their own.
I do a bit of harvesting and I also have an idea in my own head what's required in the restaurant on a daily basis.
I'll be treasure hunting on the shoreline for some salty snacks.
This is really delicious. It tastes like a little bit like vinegar and garlic and mustard. It's a bit spicy, also you get addicted.
And in Inish Own, gardener Dermot Carey talks heritage vegetables.
If you don't grow it yourself, you're not going to get the benefit of the fantastic flavours.
On Donegal's coast, where land meets sea, exists a rich world of organisms attached to bleached rock and floating in pools. Marine macroalgae was once commonly harvested as fertiliser for the farm fields along the shoreline, but today, seaweed or sea vegetables are collected as an ingredient. Rosaria Pisseri, an Italian who's made Donegal her home, and seaweed harvester Michael McCluskey brought me to Muckross, just south of Kilcar, to identify the different edible species. So Rosaria, we're just driving down to the shore now, and this is your office, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. We go down to a place called Muckross, and it's just a little peninsula, not many people living around the area, and very scenic, very very nice, very impressive for tourists as well, for people who are coming over. We are committed ourselves, really, you know, because you have to do it yourself, to just harvest in patches, not the total area. Leave always a little bit there until it grows again all around.
So very basically sustainable harvesting.
Yeah, yes. It's a bit like farming, you know, when you farm, you don't destroy your normally. You don't destroy your land because you know that it will be the crop for the next year. So
here we have about 30 or 40 species, different species of seaweeds. But on the west coast of Ireland, there's over 500 different species.
All along the coastline.
All along the coastline, yeah. This one here is a sea lettuce. It grows in a deeper part of the sea.
And it looks like it's almost like a membrane of green. It's just like, it looks like plastic, actually.
Yes, that's right, yeah. It's the same family as the spirulina, only just it's a broader leaf.
And is that it growing through the rock pools there?
Yeah. Very high in energy.
Chlorophyll, yeah.
And does it taste good?
Yeah. This is good. This is very good, yeah. This we call it sea spirulina, sea lettuce species, ulva. It's lovely when you gather it. It's like grass, as you see. You just keep the green one, the very green one. You rinse it then in water. This is what I normally do. Then you don't need to chop it, because if you put some oil, garlic, onion, and you fry it a little bit, it will become very crispy and then breaks down, you know, on its own. You know, when it's crispy with onion and garlic, then you can add the egg and make a frittata or an omelette, and taste like spinach. Taste absolutely no fish taste.
Wow! Yeah, and you're right. It does. It already looks kind of crispy or spiky.
Yeah, yeah.
As
yeah,
a grass. This one's called what again?
Spirulina.
Spirulina.
This is the what they call it, crannog here. Yeah. It's dulse, it's Palmaria palmata, so it's a dillisk, but grows much, much less, okay, because it has a hard life as a seaweed, but it will develop a natural nitrogen, which gives a very, very nice taste.
For food as well.
It is very colourful. It's such a bright green. I suppose that's the chlorophyll.
Yeah, the chlorophyll. It has two types of chlorophylls. One is water soluble and the other one is fat soluble. So it's chlorophyll that we never get with the plain food. So,
okay, yeah.
We have some nori here.
Did you say we have some nori?
We have nori, yeah.
And nori sounds Japanese.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's called Porphyra umbilicalis in Latin. It's a little bit like the green one, the leaf.
It's a bit like the sea lettuce.
Yeah. It looks very slippery, like. And in Japan, they use it for making sushi.
That's the black that they wrap the sushi roll in, isn't it?
Yeah. Black green, yeah. We don't make any nori sheets, but I never tried to make it. I asked, there is a Japanese woman living here in Fintra, and I asked her if there was any tradition in her family that I could make it again, you know, and try it myself at home. And she said, no, you buy it in the shop. I think she's too young.
just come across straight here. Yeah. Well, the seaweeds we've shown you so far now grows on the upper half of the shore. Now we'll show you the ones that grows deeper.
Okay, so we're waiting for...
Because the tide is going down very quickly.
The tide is going out, great.
This is the young sea spaghetti coming up. So it's all sustainable, you know. I have already cut this beforehand and it's growing again. And that's only about 2 weeks growth there.
So it's growing out of like a little disc at the bottom and they're tiny little...
That's there, yeah. It's about 2 inches long now at the moment.
And these little spikes just growing out of it. And could you collect that at this age?
Or No. We usually wait until it's about a metre long.
Yeah. And among the spaghetti, you can see the peppardons.
This is
really delicious. Yeah. It tastes like a little bit like vinegar and garlic and mustard. It's a bit spicy. Also, you get addicted.
And can you try taste it. You can taste that straight away? Wow. The heat.
Yeah.
That it's really like mustard.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't expect that. Mm. You get a wee little tang of salt at the beginning, because we're standing here in the middle of the... with the sea all around us. But a tiny little tang of salt at the beginning, and then this really deep peppery heat at the back of it.
Yeah.
Well, that type of seaweed, the taste will linger a wee bit longer, you know. Than...
That'd be lovely on a ham sandwich.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are there a lot of places like this along the Donegal coastline?
There is lots. We have a coastline here, and it goes all the way around to Ardra, and it's all covered in this type of seaweed. Our greatest trouble now at the moment is trying to educate people to eat seaweed within their diets. When I was growing up as a child, we already had it because our mothers and fathers knew about the seaweeds. So that's our greatest problem now, is to educate the young people that's coming up now how the beneficials of seaweeds.
Mm. I think we should take some of this spaghetti back and try it out.
Yes, we have it back. Sea spaghetti has a content of tannins, which is a little bit like red wine. So I find that boiling it, like we are going to do with a little bit of vinegar, it will make a better taste of it.
So the vinegar breaks down tannic quality?
Yes.
I'm very curious as to what this is going to taste like.
I pour plenty of water, like I would do with the spaghetti. And just one full tablespoon of vinegar.
And that's to how much sea spaghetti?
About 20 grams.
Just enough for one portion?
Yes.
Gorgeous, golden olive oil all over.
You can add salt if you want. I didn't, okay? But just take a piece.
Given that it's seaweed, does it need salt?
Well, this one has been washed, so if you really like salt, I am a salt person. So you won't realize that it's seaweed. This is really, really not fishy and delicious taste, and gives a lot of taste to the food as well. It's really a sea vegetable. It's a vegetable, you know, to eat with your other food. So this you should do with seaweed, simply, yeah.
So I'm going to try a wee bit of this now with the olive oil all over it. It's like a brown spaghetti. I mean, it does have the same texture. It's like a mild cabbage kind of taste.
Yeah, all the seaweed when they are cooked, they kind of remind the cabbage.
This would probably work really well as a salad ingredient then,
yes,
as well.
Yes, it's a salad ingredient, yeah. Or, for example, we have a mix of nut seeds and we call it duca. That would work out really, really very well as an ingredient.
Well, Rosera, thanks a million. That was delicious. Thank you. Well, next I'm in a lovely kitchen garden here just outside Letterkenny. All around me, raised beds and drills are full of salads and beans and herbs. There are boxes of onions and plump garlic waiting to be platted. The garden belongs to Carl Meehan and Kieran Davis, the husband and wife team behind local restaurant The Yellow Pepper. For the last 20 years, this pair have prided themselves in serving the best of locally sourced food, be that fish straight from Greencastle or pork from the Finn Valley. Growing their own vegetables and salads for the restaurant was a natural extension of that. I'm with Carol and Kieran here in the garden to gather ingredients for today's menu. So Kieran, this is the beginning to your day. You come out here every morning before you go into the restaurant?
Yeah, before we go into the restaurant, most mornings, nearly every morning, we come down to the garden here and I do a bit of harvesting and see what needs to be cut, and I also have an idea in my own head what's required in the restaurant on a daily basis. So today we got some beetroot here, and we have some dishes that we have beetroot in it, and so I'm just going to pull some nice beets here and chop the top leaf off it and put it into the box here.
And what will you have? What have you in mind for this now today?
Well, what do we do with that, Carol?
We use beetroot chutney a good bit. So we make, it's actually a Drina Allen recipe that we use from one of our Ballymaloe books, and it's really good. And it's with the mackerel on our starter, and it's with a goat's cheese salad on our lunchtime specials as well. So it's very popular, and we put it on some of the salads as well because people ask it, and it's a really good healthy food to eat.
So over here, then we have. I'll just move this out of the way. We've got some lovely runner beans over here, and different varieties, different colours. So what we do with that is we put them through the veg. Some of them are quite large, so they're cut up fairly small.
You're in a beautiful setting here, surrounded by the trees, and then you were saying to me as well before that you've kind of done a little bit of wildflower planting just to increase the biodiversity.
Yeah, we have a wildflower bed over here, and we've got a mix of seeds, and you know, in the summertime, maybe July, August, it's really beautiful, you know. But you'll see there's loads of bees here, wild bees and stuff, and insects, and it keeps the balance good in the garden, I think, you know. I use no chemicals whatsoever in this garden. It's completely free and balanced. The big bugs and the fast bugs look after the small bugs. With the exception of the snails occasionally. Yeah. We would have a snail problem.
The garden was here before our house. So and we even had the next thing after the garden, we got swings. So that when we came out to spend some time in the garden, that the kids could be busy when they were small. So you can see the swings now are very close to the ground, and our kids wouldn't even sit on them now. So that's how real it was. And then over time we built and moved out here, so we're very lucky to live in the country and have some good soil and a lovely little microclimate down in the garden because it's naturally protected by all the trees. So it's good, and it's a good way to be. The butterflies have arrived. It's such a great day.
What I'm going to do now is I'm just going to cut some lettuce, and this is a really nice new variety for your listeners. It's a Barba de Frati. I got the seed actually from Seeds of Italy, and I found it really, really good this year because it doesn't bolt at all, very, very, very slowly. And they're lovely in the plate, they're crispy, and they keep well as well. We have a lot of dishes that are designed around the salads that we have in the garden, so we would go through 1,000 heads of lettuce for the month of August.
From your garden?
Yeah, you can see they were all lettuce beds there,
They're
all finished there now.
Yeah.
This is just later stuff.
When I'm looking at this box here in front of me, the sheer variety of lettuce and baby leaves that you have here, is that half the attraction as well, that you as a restaurateur can get such diversity on the plate and you're not being bound by what the suppliers can bring you?
Yeah, but the suppliers will generally go for the robust variety. They're mass produced, and they are fairly cheap, to be honest with you, considering the amount of work that goes into growing vegetables, but they will never choose the more delicate varieties because it won't keep. You know, if you're importing and it's on the back of a van, and then it's in and out restaurants, and it deteriorates, can deteriorate. So they will go for the hardiest variety. There isn't that much grown in Ireland. You know, there are some, I think there is a bit of market gardening up around Dublin, and I think they have some nice stuff, but most of the greens come from or imported, what I can see.
And in terms of the volume that you need for the restaurant, how does that work with the garden? Is the garden kind of dictating its own pace?
It does, you know. I mean, you have to learn yourself, you know, what's coming, and you have to encourage your kitchen staff and put them on notice, maybe. There's something coming on stream. Make sure it's get used up.
But we have a great way we work our menu. We have a Blackport special, so anytime we have particular different products from the garden that may not necessarily be on our everyday stable dishes, that they get up there, and that's when the chefs get really creative and make things a bit different.
It keeps I think kitchens in tune with the season, the seasonality of it.
Do you think we lost a bit of that? That seasonality.
I suppose maybe just sort of lost our, you know, what's around us and what's really good and what you can grow in your garden that's really modern, I suppose is the word, that, you know, that Irish food isn't old-fashioned and it isn't just bacon and cabbage. But people are really interested in unusual things. Like, definitely people are changing.
Does this make financial sense for you in terms of the work that goes into it?
It doesn't really. It's if it's neutral, you know, that's probably a good result, you know. But a neutral, I mean, neutral on the financial sense, doesn't mean it's neutral in every other sense. It's very positive in everything else. I mean, you're getting a head start with your quality, and you get something that nobody else has as well.
Well, next, I'm in another restaurant garden, this time an old walled garden outside Bridgend on the Inishowen Peninsula. A century ago, gardens like these across the country might have been filled with hundreds of varieties of fruit and veg, many no longer cultivated, and many now lost to our gardens and plates. I'm here to meet organic vegetable producer Dermot Carey to learn about heritage varieties. Former head gardener at Lissadell in Sligo, Dermot also established the impressive kitchen gardens of Harry's Restaurant here in Bridgend, and with David Langford, caretakes a national collection of heritage varieties of potato. So we're here in the garden of Burt House. Dermot, tell me what's in front of us.
Yeah, we have the old coal frames here. The garden itself is an acre and a half. It's a very old wall garden. And as you can see in the distance there, we have an old boiler, and that was used to heat the glass houses. And you can see the metal piping that ran underneath the staging, underneath the benches. The garden itself was used to supply a couple of greengrocers in Derry in the 1950s. And we have all our own veg for approximately 10 months.
So talk me through what we have here.
We have the Romanesco cauliflowers, we have regular Calabrese, we have long red Florence, they're a kind of a torpedo red onion, they're a torpedo shape. We have red scarlet micro turnips. We tend to grow for the restaurant a lot of produce that's unusual, because there's no point in growing, you know, veg where you can buy from the local wholesaler. Mm. Like, it's more food production than gardening, you know?
Yes.
So we're thinking along the lines of food production. These actually are not an heirloom tomato, but they have that appearance. They're a yellow plum tomato, but they are an F1 hybrid.
There's heirloom, there's heritage, and there's F1 hybrid. Yeah. What's the difference?
Well, the difference is the F1 hybrid, you can't save the seed from it and re-sow it. Very often F1 hybrid is more uniform. It's more vigorous, more disease resistant and faster growing. Then, of course, you have the old heirloom tomatoes. Maybe not as vigorous and not as uniform, but very often a fantastic flavour. Very often it would have a flavour far superior than an F1 hybrid. The likes of a Brandywine. The Brandywine tomato was grown in the 1880s by the Amish people in America, and it was called after the Brandywine River. They're a large beefsteak type tomato,
right.
But they can be oddly shaped and a very thin skin on them, so they crack quite easily. We grow them here. They mature a bit later. not a massive yield, but a fantastic flavour, but they have a very short shelf life. So there's no great advantage in growing a regular tomato that you can buy in most shops. You might as well grow something unusual like this yellow plum tomato. But then you do have to be careful. Sometimes we compromise between an F1 and an heirloom. So we tend to take the best from both worlds. The best from the old, maybe an old Victorian variety, like the tomato Brandywine. Then we would try some of the modern F1 hybrids, the likes of this one here, this yellow plum type. So we're not stuck in any era, because I know if them same Victorian gardeners were alive today, they would have moved on.
You worked in Lissadel for quite a long time.
I was there for I was the head gardener there for about five years or so. Yeah, great experience. Yeah, and we were supplying 7-8 restaurants in the Sligo area.
And one of the things that Lissadel became well known for, and you have a huge interest in, is the whole heritage potato collection.
Yeah, that's right. The heritage potato collection was started in Scotland by David Langford. We acquired the collection in 2007. We started off with 24 varieties. And then in 2008, the International Year of the Potato at the time, we grew 160 varieties. So we've been increasing it ever since, and we're up to 192 at the moment.
Wow. And how many of each variety would you grow?
It's just two seed of each. We'd plant them, I know in the case of Lissadel, we'd plant them 3 foot apart. And we'd very nice signage with photographs and a little description of each variety and a bit of history and a story. Yeah, a lot of people found it really interesting, like us Irish have an inherent interest in the spuds. So we'd very old varieties. The oldest variety we had in the collection was a variety called Irish Apple, because I think back in the day they were called Earth Apples, Irish Apple, and that was from 1768.
Wow.
That was when it was first recorded. We have Lumper then, 1806, and that was the variety that was grown and failed in many cases during the famine in the 1840s.
And where, if I wanted to start growing heritage varieties of vegetables or heirloom varieties, where would I go to find the seed?
The likes of Irish Seed Savers, they're in Scariff and County Clare. They have some old, very old varieties, and they might sell you maybe two tubers, two seed, and then if you plant them two seed, you get maybe at least 12. So you keep increasing it yourself. Scary Champion is a nice potato, or if you can get really good Golden Wonders. Now, Golden Wonders are difficult to grow organically because they need a lot of fertility. They need a really strong, rich soil. Otherwise, it can be quite small, but they're well worth it even if they're small, because the flavour. You know, they're kind of a pear, russet skin, pear-shaped potato.
Right. And in terms of other veg, do you grow heritage varieties of say, I don't know, carrots, or how successful were they? What would you do if you were in just starting your own garden now?
Well, for the beans, we've often grown, there's one called Painted Lady, and there's a lovely red and white flower. They're a runner bean, they're a very old runner bean. But then this one here, this is a variety called Cobra. I believe that's a more modern variety. That's a climbing French bean. So if you can maybe pick the best of both worlds, you know, get some of the older ones are quite nice, the flavour. But then sometimes they're not as disease resistant. Or the yield mightn't be as high, but then the flavour would be fantastic.
Why should people try and you know, have some of these things in their garden?
Well, it's nice to have the likes of biodiversity, yeah, to keep these old varieties going. Then, of course, there's a reason why some of these varieties are not being used. You know, they mightn't be commercially viable. The likes of, you're talking about potato, if you're talking about the Sharps Express. Sharps Express is one of the nicest varieties of first early potatoes to grow. But the yield is quite small. They're a small little potato with a fantastic flavour. Maybe not viable to grow on a commercial scale, but ideal for the allotment holder or gardener. It all comes back to them then. Say, oh my God, I remember it now. That's what it should taste like. That's what it used to taste like.
It's kind of exciting that you get a little bit of luxury that you can't necessarily get in the shops.
That if you don't do it yourself, if you don't grow it yourself, you're not going to get the benefit of the fantastic flavours.
Mm. So if we grow some of these heritage varieties in our garden, we're having a piece of all that history as well.
Yeah, it's a way to keep them varieties alive, keep them going. Because maybe if it wasn't for the allotment gardener, a lot of these varieties would have died out. Yeah.
Well, that's it for today. I'll be here with more great Donegal food stories next week, so hope you can join me.
Our Food is a Hollybrook production for Highland Radio, funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee.